What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm back at it today. I've got Reagan Donahue here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast as we're talking about from going from athletic trainer to becoming a PA. And if you are an athletic trainer and you want to become a physician assistant or a nurse or a physical therapist or even a chiropractor, those are conversations that we're having because the point is to find something that you're really good at, something that really drives you, that makes you want to come to work, makes you want to serve the people that you're serving. And if it's not athletic training, that's okay. And Reagan's going to tell us about her journey going from athletic trainer to physician assistant, and she's got kind of a unique setting. So Reagan, welcome to the show.
No, thank you. My initial thought was to go into veterinary medicine. It's really actually pretty tough to get into vet school. And I had a scholarship at New Mexico State. And so my next love, because I was a jock and I liked medicine, would have been like a sports medicine. So I ended up researching the major and found out that New Mexico State actually did have an athletic training program, a really good one. And so I met with them and discussed the curriculum and everything else, and I decided to go ahead and do that. I started college in 88, and then I graduated from athletic training in December of 92 and certified in June of 93. I decided pretty soon after I certified, due to some interesting circumstances, that I would pursue medicine in another way. And that basically came out of the fact that even though things are much more open for women these days, 25 years ago, it really wasn't. And if you wanted to go into sports medicine in the professional realm, like the NFL or NHL, those jobs were never given to women. And so I really like the higher impact sports, and that was kind of my goal going into athletic training at the time. And the fact that those jobs were not going to be available to me really wasn't communicated to me at the time until graduation. And then it was like, well, they kind of groomed the women to do secondary school and, teach in high school and do the high school setting. And they groomed the boys to go into the pros. And I actually have multiple guys that I went to school with that are working in pro baseball right now and pro hockey. But none of the women ever got to the pro level. And it kind of, I don't know, set me back because I had never thought that I would be limited by anything other than the amount of, the amount of effort I was willing to put into something. And so my sister had just finished PA school. And she talked to me and convinced me that, maybe I could do sports medicine and orthopedics in a different way. If I went to PA school and I could, I could get out of PA school, work for, a team orthopedic and still be able to work in that realm without having to deal with the issues at the time. And so, excuse me, I went to, I applied to several PA schools and, I chose to go to Emory University, which is in Atlanta, Georgia. I was mainly looking for a master's level program. I didn't really want another bachelor's. Now PA schools are all mostly master's level programs, but back then there were only 8 or 9 in the nation. And so I applied to 4 of those and decided to go to Emory. I graduated from Emory in December of 95. And so now I've worked in multiple areas in medicine, but now I'm working back in my hometown for a local clinic system and I just got to finally, after literally 20 years of begging and working, was able to open a school-based health center in my small high school here. And so now finally I'm back in a position where I can work in the sports medicine field and work with the kids and contribute to the community, which is, you know, basically what I wanted to do in the first place. It just took me a long way around. But you know, although those experiences have been good ones, I worked 8 or 9 years in emergency medicine. I've worked in orthopedic spine surgery. But most of my experience, I'll be a PA now for, 23 years, going on 24 years. And most of that experience has been in family practice. That's basically the journey that I took and kind of how I ended up getting there. I think that if circumstances might have been different, all those years ago, I probably never would have left sports medicine. But it has ended up being a good thing for my family, because athletic training it's a labor of love, and it's not something that you get rich on, and it's not something that you get a lot of sleep doing. You work tirelessly day in and day out. Basically, 7 days a week, and constantly. And being in another form of medicine, it's allowed me to have where I could choose to have weekends off. I could choose to have holidays off. And it's been a little bit more family friendly. I know the more I get back into the sports medicine side of things, the less time I have at home. And so that's always something that people need to look at also.
Yeah, so earlier you mentioned there were, several circumstances that kind of led you to look for something different. Was that primarily the lack of ability to advance?
Yes. Yeah, that was the main reason. I was very disheartened and frustrated by that, because I was one of the top candidates coming out of that program, and for me not to be able to, finish what I started or get where I thought I wanted to be, I was pretty disillusioned at the time. And so, I just decided, I guess I just need to go do something else then. And at the time, it would have been fine to work in secondary school and do that, but that's just not where I had envisioned myself within the profession. And so I took it a different route. Now that I'm older and I'm more patient, teaching and being at a secondary school is fine. But when you're young and you're full of fire and you want to set the world ablaze, that's not exactly your idea of a good time, and unless it was something that you had always wanted to do. And so, that was the main reason that I ended up going into medicine, general medicine anyway. But, I think that, there's a reason for everything. You end up where you're supposed to end up. But.
All right, you mentioned that you were as you said, a jock. And so what sports did you play?
Basketball and track and field. And then I didn't play volleyball in the fall. I love football. And so I followed the football team and took stats for them and did stuff like that. And that's really what I wanted to do with my athletic training career, is I wanted to go into the NFL. But that just didn't work out. I think whenever I was just about ready to graduate from athletic training, there was one woman in the NFL as a trainer, I'm pretty positive that she worked for the Oakland Raiders, and she was an older lady. She was old enough to be their moms, you know. And they had built her basically her own kind of training room to the side of the locker room. But she was the only one. So, you know, that door was just not open for me. But I played basketball. I did, you know, I did track. And I picked up other sports later in life, but those were the ones I competed in high school.
Gotcha. Okay, so tell me a little bit about the school-based clinic that you opened up.
Well, we finally were able to get the school district to agree to opening the clinic system that I work for. Has multiple clinics, and they had multiple school-based clinics, the Hatch Valley schools were kind of the lone holdout. We have a very conservative community, and they just were kind of iffy about us being there. But, you know, we finally were able to open that. June will be 2 years that we've been there, and it's been very successful. And like I say, now I'm able to be at the school and work with the athletes and kind of get back into my sports medicine roots a little bit, which I really appreciate. I always did love it, and I always have missed it. As you know, as a matter of fact, I mean, for the last 20 years, I've helped out on a volunteer basis. Basically, every time somebody got hurt, I was jumping the fence to go help and things. And then, I think it's probably been the last 8 years, the head football coaches have asked if I would travel with them and help them. And so I've done that on a volunteer basis for a while now. But now I'm able to work with all the athletes, not just the football guys, and kind of maintain my skills. And something that happens to a lot of people who decide to take their career in another route from sports medicine is they usually let their certification lapse. And they just, you know, say, well, I'm going to go into nursing and I don't need this anymore. They, you know, they don't want to put forth the extra money for the continuing education and all of the registration fees and things to maintain their athletic training license. And but that's something that I never did give up. I've maintained my certification all these years and, you know, my state licensure and everything else. And in hopes that one day I would be back in a position that I could utilize that.
Yeah, so
the school base, you know, the school base is doing, that's okay. The school based clinic is doing really well. It's doing well. Mostly, you know, primary care stuff, which I've been doing forever, but I try to leave the afternoons a little bit open so I can do more sports medicine and you know, go check on the kids and everything.
So all these years you've maintained your BOC, your athletic training license. And then you said it also, you did like rotations or time in the orthopedic as well as emergency medicine, and for the most part spent your time in family practice as a PA. So tell me a little bit more about your job as an athletic trainer there now. And so I know you said you're kind of traveling with the team, but so me, in my situation, you know, I'm full-time here at the high school. I work with sports. We basically cover all the home events and, for the most part, the practices that are, you know, within the before 5:30 type frame. So what does that look like for you now?
Well, for me now, I think the only coaches that had any foresight into the value of an athletic trainer being there with them for quite a long time has been our football program. And so they came to me and asked if I would please, you know, be there for all their games, their away games. I travel with them, tape them up, get ready to go, manage their injuries and everything else. And that's been going on basically as a volunteer. I mean, it's an unpaid position. I've kind of taken over for the school as far as ordering their sports medicine supplies and things like that, mainly out of self-preservation so that I know that I have what I need. Now that I'm at the school all the time, though, I am able to work with the other sports a little more. The other coaches, you know, most schools our size do not have an athletic trainer. And so they're accustomed to not having one. And so them learning that there is a huge value in that has been a journey too. And so now it's kind of gotten to the point that all of the coaches, all of the sports, you know, I get referrals right and left, you know, sending kids to me that are injured or have issues. If they send them to me at the clinic setting, I mean, that's something that I handle from a family practice base thing, you know, through insurance. If it's after school, it's a freebie for them. And I'm hoping one day the schools will see the value in hiring a full-time athletic trainer who, you know, who can manage these kids. Because as I creep up in age, and I am creeping up there, it's becoming harder and harder on me to make time for my personal life, my family, when the freebies are lined out the door, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky in that my employer is supportive in my role doing that. And a lot of it is because the boss, her grandkids are some of the kids I'm taking care of. If I worked for another place, they would probably not be as understanding of my time away and my time that I spend giving my services away for free. But I'm also kind of thinking the longer this goes on, and we're into our second decade of this now, that I'm really not sure that the school will ever hire somebody as long as they're getting it for free from me. And, yeah, you know, it's kind of like it's, you know, why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free? And so, you know, I don't know how to do anything more to convince them about the value of having somebody there dedicated to those kids all the time. Because, I mean, clearly I have a business to run. I have a clinic to run. And so, you know, I can't be there for those kids 24/7, but, you know, we try.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things, are you doing good by exposing them to it and then pulling back and saying, okay, well, now what are you going to do? Or are you devaluing your services by giving it away for free? And so it's a very tricky balance, and I don't have that answer. So,
right, yeah, I don't either. And I don't have the heart to turn a kid away. it's just not in my DNA, you know. So basically, you know, I try to get the kids in during our regular clinic time so that I can generate some kind of income for my employer, and they're insured. They don't have to come up with anything, but their insurance does. But you know, I don't want them to get the idea that it's easy and that it's just free. But I just don't have the heart to tell them no when they come and ask me for help, you know?
Gotcha. All right. So tell me some of the best parts of being a PA, and then tell me some of the worst parts of being a PA.
Ooh, okay. Some of the best parts, I think, for being a physician assistant is the flexibility of that profession. Because if I decide tomorrow that I do not want to do family practice anymore, I can change to whatever field I want to change to. I don't have to go back and do another internship, another residency. If I want to do emergency medicine, I do emergency medicine. If I want to be in work neurosurgery, I can work neurosurgery. If I want, you know, if I want to change careers at the drop of a hat, the job possibilities are endless. And those positions are always out there. I don't know a PA that doesn't have at least one job. And so that's always, I mean, that's good. That's job security and flexibility. And if I decide, you know, I really want a job where I have weekends and holidays off, well, then just like now, I work for a clinic system where I can have that. Some of the downside of it is that even though it is good to have the relationship with your supervising physician, or in my case, I'm in the process of doing what's called a collaborating physician, which is they basically aren't overseeing much of what I do at all. At this point in my career, I can qualify to do that. It's nice to have that. If there's a complicated case or something that I want to bounce off of them, it's nice to have that. But the independence isn't there for me to be able to open my own practice, for example. And that's all political. I mean, that's a political thing. The state boards of medicine and the state boards of nursing, they kind of don't like the competition. And so they really have lobbied to make sure in most states that's not a possibility. I would have to have, you know, my supervising physician in that practice with me. But I think the downside is a higher level of stress and responsibility, where I am not just responsible for their sports medicine injuries and things like that. I am responsible from the top of their head to their tippy toes. And, you know, there are very healthy, usually in sports medicine and athletic training, those are very healthy, motivated people who really want to get well. They want to get better. They want to get back to their sport. They want to get back to their activity. And in general medicine, that's a lot of time not the case. There's chronic illness and death and managing somebody who's in heart failure and, you know, having to deal with their families and their grieving process. That's the hard part. It's a lot more complicated. It's a lot more challenging in that regard. The thing that goes without saying is, of course, I mean, athletic trainers don't make a whole lot of money. Like I said before, it is definitely a labor of love, and it's not something that you're going to get rich or famous at, for sure. And it has been a positive thing for me to be a PA for my family, because I'm able to provide a very good living for them, and a lot more job flexibility. And so, I mean, that's how I see it. I think that I really miss the young, healthy population, the getting to be outdoors more, because, you know, as a PA, we don't get to go out into the field unless it's a military position. And, that's something that always interested me as well. But after you have children, that's not something that you can go and do. A lot of people don't realize that that's where the PA profession started, is, you know, within the military. And after the Vietnam War, and after the Korean War, people were coming back with all of this medical experience as medics, and they didn't have anything saying that they could do those skills on U.S. soil. And so Duke University started the first PA program. And so there's the really strong military roots within the PA profession. And so, but that's really the only branch that you would end up being outdoors with. So, I mean, there's good and bad. I mean, there's beautiful days out there, but there's also, you know, I can't count the amount of times I froze my buns off on the football sideline, you know. So, I mean, that's it's good to be indoors sometimes as well.
Hey, to discuss the education process, and I know obviously it's changed. You said this is you're getting close to 25 years out of PA school, but going from athletic training, graduated, practicing as an athletic trainer, and then returning to school as a PA, talk about the education, the process, the differences, how maybe AT really helped you. So,
I think the athletic training thing did help me. As far as, you know, the orthopedic section, I basically could have taught the orthopedic section of my program, even though I went to a really nice PA school. And they are looking more and more for people who have a medical background and some experience. Now, 25 years ago, I mean, there was a lady in my class that was a retired teacher. You know, she had zero medical background. There were people who were, you know, that had worked on oil rigs and things like that. Nowadays, that's totally different. You have to come from some kind of medical background and have some kind of experience to be competitive to try to get into any PA school whatsoever. And like I was saying, I think there were only 6 or 7, maybe 8 master's level programs back in 93 whenever I started. Now, at least 3/4 of the PA programs in the United States are master's level, and that's something that they're working toward. And it is a lot more competitive to try to get in, but there's also, I think there were maybe around 200 PA programs when I was applying, and now there's well over 1,000 PA programs in the United States. So it is a profession that is expanding. And as far as the education, what it prepared me for, I mean, like I said, the orthopedic part was a breeze, but it didn't prepare me, you know, to learn to read EKGs or chest x-rays or anything like that. You know, my anatomy, physiology, my orthopedic section, that was all very, very easy for me. But I mean, the PA school that I went to was within the medical school at Emory. And so, you know, we took, you know, biology and biochemistry and pharmacokinetics with the medical students. So it was some next level stuff. And it was tough, but you know, being a graduate student, it has its perks too, because you're not fresh out of high school. You know, you have some college experience, you have developed some study skills, some maturity, and so, you know, I definitely think that PA school being a master's level thing is a good thing. If you're trying to do that straight out of high school, I don't see how someone can do it successfully, because it really does. You're in class literally 8 hours straight every day. You study another, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. My PA program that I went to, even back then, they didn't permit you to work. And so, because they knew that you had to commit so much time to that. And so, you get in tremendous debt. You either you either come from money, or you get in tremendous debt because you have to borrow every dime that you need for tuition, books, everything else. And so, you know, and then usually in PA programs, the first year and a half is all classroom work. And the next following year is usually you're out in the field doing rotations. So you do rotations. It depends on the program. All programs are a little different, and their prereqs are a little bit different. But mine, you know, we had surgical rotations, emergency medicine, orthopedics, pediatric, surgery, you know, and then you could do electives. You could do a rotation in cardiothoracic surgery if you wanted to. And some of my classmates did do that. I spent all my electives in emergency medicine and orthopedics. And so just because that's where my interest was. But it definitely needs to be a master's level thing. I really don't think that back in my day there were some bachelor level programs and even some certificate programs for people who already had a master's or already had a bachelor's degree. There were some of those, and I just don't see how that could turn out, you know, someone that was effective at trying to master all areas of medicine. That's basically what they train you to. That way you can go into whatever field you want to, and you at least have the stepping stone to be able to do that. So if I left and I wanted to be a PA in trauma surgery, I need to be able to walk into that operating room and know what the heck I'm doing from the first minute I walk in there, with literally a quarter of the training of the surgeon. And so it's pretty rigorous, and it's not something that you can just kind of do on the side from your regular job, for sure. But I don't know. I think it's worth it in the end. It's something you have to buckle down and do. And the people that were in my class that had kind of been out in the world and had been out of school for a little while and kind of lost their study skills and their time management skills, and the ability to make money, because once you get out of school and you want to eat something besides ramen noodles, you know, it's kind of hard to go back to being broke again. And go back to having to study all those hours and everything else again. And so one of the positive things, I think, that even though my path was a little bit different, it was good that I went basically pretty near straight from undergraduate school to graduate school, because I was used to being broke. I was used to having to study. I was, you know, and so my study skills hadn't lapsed, and that helped a bunch too.
All right. So usually we'll have, like I said, I'm doing this live. So I want to give a quick shout out. You got Mike McGonigal, Hayden Terry, Jamie DiRollo, Ted Hirschfield, Tanya Watson. I know Matt and Lindsay Thomas, which is Matt watching live. So thanks for watching live, guys. If you have questions, you can ask them in there. But Reagan, tell me a little bit about, like, what would you say to a young AT in their first, second year as a professional deciding, hey, this isn't exactly what I want, let me try PA school? What would you tell them?
I would tell them to definitely do the research, because, you know, research what it's going to cost you, research the amount of time that it's going to take, and really know that is what you want to do before you go into it. I had, I don't know, probably, of course this is way back when, but at least 25% of my classmates at Emory never practiced a day in their life. They kind of went down that road thinking that that's what they wanted. And by the end of it, they decided that that was not for them. And then they had accrued this tremendous debt that they had to pay off. And, you know, I would definitely do my homework. As far as job prospects, PAs, definitely the jobs are out there. But the jobs are out there in other medical areas as well. You know, nursing is wide open, and it's especially wide open if you are able to get your bachelor's or master's degree in nursing. Things like being an ultrasound tech or an MRI tech, those are all things that are much needed and are in high demand, and they don't require the tremendous amount of time and money that it takes to go to PA school. If it's something that, you know, you just are very passionate about and something that you think that you would want to do for the rest of your life, then by all means, by all means. But I would definitely do my research, because it's no picnic. And the work can be very rewarding, but it can be very difficult as well. And it can be hard on you physically. It can be hard on you emotionally. And I think that's the my biggest thing is, you know, before you jump ship and decide that you want to go do something else, really research all different options about how you can expand your knowledge or other fields that you might want to go into. And I know the choice to go to PA school is fairly popular right now. You know, I've had, you know, nursing students and paramedics and people that I've worked with before that's what they decided they want. And, but it's not easy. And so, you know, they need to be 100% positive before they go down that road.
Yeah, I have a friend that was an athletic trainer, decided to go to PA school, and I think probably got a year or so into it and then ended up failing out or dropping out. And so then not only have you lost that year of income, but you've also accrued all that debt from the school and from the living expenses, and then it ended up not working, and then you're back to kind of where you were. Unless you got to change right. And do something completely different. So,
yeah, it's not easy. It is time consuming. And I think that it also depends on your home situation a lot. If you're young and single and you're able to move anywhere and go anywhere and do anything and not be worried about your spouse or kids or whatever, because I also, the people that were in my class at PA school that were married at the time, of all of them, I think only one marriage lasted. Because it definitely takes 100% of everything you've got. And some spouses can handle that, but most of them can't. And, you know, the financial part of it, you know, just getting in deeper and deeper debt, it's very, very hard. So, you know, I just say it kind of depends on the person, but they definitely need to research their situation before they jump into it.
I completely agree. Don't go into it blind. All right. So we're getting to the end here. I know that you said that if people want to contact you, then they can email you. I have links to that here in the show notes, but Regan's email is rdunnahoo@hatch, like in Hatch Pepper or Open the Hatch, hatchschools.net. Again, I'll have a link to that in the show notes. And so again, I want to give a shout out to the people that have joined on the Facebook Live. So I really love when there's that live audience asking questions. So I know Chris and Jose joined after I gave that last shout out. So thanks for jumping in, watching live. If you have questions for Regan, go ahead and ask them right now, because like I said, it's at that point to where I'm wrapping up. Like she said, if you're thinking about doing PA school, you got to really know you're gonna get into it. And then, Reagan, one last question from me is, if you were going to do things differently, what would that be?
If I were going to do things differently, I would have probably waited a year and went, even though Emory was an incredible experience. I was on the waiting list at Baylor, and Baylor is a 24-month, it's a master's, but it's a non-thesis master's program, and it was a ton cheaper. So it boiled down to the money. I would have probably gone to Baylor instead, as far as PA school goes. As far as life, I would have done a better job of researching my prospects, my job prospects when I graduated. I went into it assuming that I could achieve what I wanted to achieve, and I was very naive about that, and I would have researched it better. And I probably still would have gone into the field, but I wouldn't have been so disappointed and disheartened, you know, whenever I changed professions. I think that's the big thing is the same as PA school. You have to know what you're getting into. You have to know what your prospect is at the end of the road, how far in debt you're going to be, or where you're going to end up, or how it's going to affect your family. But those are a few things that I would have done differently.
All right. Very good. Reagan, I really appreciate your time and just sharing your wisdom, your experience as a physician assistant, and then, you know, open up the school-based clinic where you're still using your athletic training skills, kind of things that we should consider if we are looking into switching careers in a PA. And again, I talked about in the PT one or in the nursing one, that one career is not better than the other. There's advantages and disadvantages to both. And if there's one that really fits your needs, your lifestyle, your desires, then chase after that one. But you have to be all in, because Greg talked about it. He went back to school and got into a bunch of debt because of PT school. And then with nursing, both of those ladies, they changed careers right towards the end or right after graduating. And then, like Reagan just said, if it's there's a lot of people that didn't end up working out as PAs even after graduating PA school. So all that time and money and loss of marriage and loss of relationships. So if you're going to switch, you need to be all in. You can't just do it halfway. So other parting words of wisdom?
No, that's pretty much it. You know, just do your research, and do your research on your program. If you decide that you're going to go into nursing, or you're going to be an MRI tech, or you're going to be a PA or whatever, really research that program, what its prerequisites are, the time that they're expecting you to put into it, the money it's going to cost you, whether they're going to allow you to work on the side or not. And really, if you have a husband, a wife, a significant other, children, they need to be all in too. They have to understand that it is going to take literally at least 95% of your time. And if they're not into it, then you have to decide if it's worth you going through with it or not, because you might lose that relationship. And you might, you know, like you say, be in debt and still not be where you want to be. So, I mean, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physician-assistant. Again, I'll have links to contact Reagan there. And then some of her answers, in case you just didn't catch that. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physician-assistant. And, you know, listening to this afterwards, not live right now, I really appreciate if you go to facebook.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast, and then you can like or follow the page. I'm not sure which one does what, but that'll tell you whenever I'm live, and then you can jump in even just for a few minutes to say hey, or ask a question, or say hey, I went to grad school with that person, that kind of thing. So I really enjoy and appreciate the live audience, or meeting you live and in person, those kind of things. But check out the Facebook page. It's where I pretty much always go live, and I do the YouTube live when I can, as long as it's working out right. So Regan Donahue, working as a physician assistant with school-based clinic. And I am Jeremy Jackson, again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physician assistant. And that is a wrap. Thanks, Regan.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Have a good one. You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.